But I want us to consider for a few moments this evening what Paul has to say in Colossians chapter 2 and verse 14. So let's turn to that passage, to that verse. I'll read it again before we seek with God's help to understand it. Colossians chapter 2 and verse 14. Paul tells us this glorious news. He says that Christ has wiped out the handwriting of requirements that was against us, which was contrary to us. And he has taken it out of the way, having nailed it to the cross. The gospel is good news. That's what it means. It is good news. It is news about a person who has done something. It's news that God wants to be heard. And it's news that God would declare afresh to us tonight, and I pray that you would help me to be the means by which he declares that news. And here is the good news. Good news for people in Clarberston Road and wherever you've come from. The news is that God has wiped out the handwriting of requirements that was against us, which was contrary to us. And he has taken it out of the way, having nailed it to the cross. Why is that good news, you might say? Well, let me explain. Firstly, we need to understand what on earth Paul means by the handwriting of requirements, which was against us and was contrary to us. Now, three words there in English, handwriting of requirements, just one word in Greek, kairographos. And that was a word used commonly in the world in which Paul was writing and in the day in which he was writing. And it was a technical term. And it referred to a special kind of certificate. And many of the Christians to whom Paul was writing were likely either to have received one of these certificates themselves or to have given this certificate to another person. Now, usually a certificate is something to be proud of, isn't it? You've received it in recognition of a great achievement. And we're familiar with that today. So you might receive, and many are, receiving at the moment, a degree certificate, which says, declares in writing that you have attained a certain standard in a certain discipline. Or you might get a certificate, of course, to denote the fact that you've passed a certain grade in learning the piano, or that you've managed to swim a certain distance. And with these kinds of certificates, degree certificates, music certificates, swimming certificates, people are so proud of them that often they put them in a frame, don't they, and display them on the wall so that people can come and see them when they visit. I notice grandparents particularly like to do that with things that their grandchildren have got. Perhaps you can resonate with that. But the certificate that Paul is referring to here in verse 14 was not the kind of certificate you would want other people to see. Instead of putting it on display, you would probably want to bury it in the back of a drawer, because this certificate was nothing to be proud of. It was also called, and in a sense, one modern translation has it like this, and it's a helpful one, a certificate of indebtedness. A certificate of indebtedness. And it stated, as you would expect, that the person whose name was written on it, they hadn't achieved a great standard in something, rather they were in debt to somebody. And this is how it worked. If you borrowed money from somebody, so put yourself in this position now, you borrow money from somebody, or you obtain an item from them on a kind of buy now, pay later basis, then you would be required to write on some papyrus your name and the full extent of your debt. And you would then present that to the person you would borrow the money from for them to keep. And they would have in their possession an official written record of your indebtedness to them. It functioned in the same way that an IOU would do today. And this person from whom you had borrowed, the person to whom you were in debt, would retain this certificate with your name and the amount of the debt in their possession until such time as you managed to clear that debt. And until that happened, there it was for all to see on this debt, certificate, sorry, of indebtedness. And Paul says that every human being has in their name, before God, a certificate of indebtedness. In other words, there are things they owe to God that they have not given him. What do we owe God? Well, he is our creator. He made us, and as such, we owe him our lives, our worship, our obedience, our service. He is rightly entitled to those things. When God requires us to worship him, when God requires us to follow him, serve him and obey him as he clearly does in the scriptures, he is only seeking from us what he has every right to expect. He created us. Look at how he's dealt with us. Every good gift and every perfect gift, where does that come from? Above, comes to us from above. Everything we have, everything we enjoy, everything that is good and pleasant and builds us up, we have by the sovereign grace of God. And God is good, the Bible tells us, to everyone, to everything that he has made. He sends the sun to shine on the righteous and the unrighteous. He sends the rain on those who are godly and on those who are not. In other words, he's good to people irrespective of how they treat him. I used to think with that verse, that those verses from Jesus about the sun on the righteous and the unrighteous, the rain on the godly and the ungodly, I used to think that meant that God dealt with, which it does mean this, God dealt with those who know him and those who don't in the same way. So he's good in giving the sun, and also he makes sure the godly get the rain as well as the ungodly. Well, it doesn't mean that, does it? It means because we need the sun and the rain, and God gives everything everyone needs so abundantly, doesn't he? It's the kind of God he is. And how do we repay him by nature? We despise him. We reject him. We turn away from him. We don't worship him, we worship ourselves. We don't serve him, we serve ourselves. We set ourselves up in his place. We dethrone him in our minds and our hearts anyway, not actually, because God has set his son on his throne and who can depose him. But in our hearts and our minds, we kick God off the throne and we put ourselves in his place. And we either deny that God exists or we like to tell God what he should do. And we like to tell him and to try and hold God to account for what the things he has done. We haven't obeyed him. We haven't served him. We haven't worshipped him. We haven't loved him. We haven't followed him at all. Those things are required of us. They are rightly required of us, but we haven't done them. And so we have a tremendous debt to God. A failure to love him. A failure to serve him. A failure to obey him. A failure to follow him and honour him and treasure him and cherish him. Each and every one of us are in that position by nature. This huge defaulting on our part, on our obligations to God. Our nation is in debt, isn't it? That's one of the debates at the moment, isn't it? I don't want to go into politics tonight, but one of the debates, isn't it, amongst those vying for leadership of the Tory party. Can we go further into debt to grow the economy by borrowing more? Or is it time, you know, to try and sort out the debts we've already got? But whichever way you think we should go forward, the reality is that the nation is in great debt. The government has to borrow a tremendous amount to deal with the pandemic and to fund the furlough scheme and so on. The government, the nation is in debt. And families are in debt, aren't they? And individuals are in debt. And it's an awful thing to be in debt, and it has tremendous consequences, doesn't it? And it can bring great burden to people and great stress and anxiety. But there's an even greater debt than any financial debt that we may have tonight, and it is this debt that we owe to God. This debt of love, service, obedience, worship that we have not given him. Because this debt has major consequences. Sometimes people think they can just accrue debt, can't they? And it doesn't matter. Just carry on. There we are. that doesn't work with sin and our failure to do for God and to give to God what is required of us. God calls that dead in. There's coming a day when God will open the books and will get out, as it were, the certificates of indebtedness. God will get out the record of the failure of every human being by nature. The failure of us to meet our obligations to him and to give him what he rightly requires from us. And if we have not dealt with that debt, and if nothing has been done about it, God will bring the penalties for defaulting on our obligations to bear. And the Bible makes it clear that God will pour out his wrath upon us in eternity as a judgment, a righteous, legitimate judgment for what we have not given to him. He's very gracious. He gives us time to sort the debt out. He doesn't call it in straight away. And sometimes he lets that debt get very big indeed without calling it in upon us. He lets people accrue the debt over 10 years and 20 years and 30 years and 40 years and 50 years. And he gives all that time, as he's given you your whole life, to face this debt that you owe to God, to deal with the certificate of indebtedness that he has in his possession with your name on it. And yet still you have done nothing about it. There's a day coming when all the certificates are being brought out and God is calling the debts in. So how can you deal with it then? I suppose the most important thing is to know it needs to be dealt with. Because perhaps people know tonight about their financial debts and they're well aware of that. Bills are coming, the letters are dropping through the door and they've got to deal with it and they're well aware. But so many tonight are ignorant. So many in this village, so many people you deal with are ignorant of the facts that God has this certificate of indebtedness with their name on it in heaven. And that they have failed in their obligations to their Creator and their Maker and the one who provide so many good things for them, although they will not acknowledge it. Perhaps they've never heard that they're in debt to him. They've never heard what I'm telling you tonight. Well, there's your responsibility as a church, isn't it? That's why God has planted you in this community. That's why he's left you in this village. Because people need to hear of the plight they're in. They need, as it were, to receive a copy of their bank statement. And they need to see it. It makes painful reading. It's not pleasant by any means. But they need to see from you their debt to God. Or perhaps people do know. Perhaps you've spoken to this village over many years in not quite necessarily exactly the anger that I'm bringing it tonight. But you've given this message to this village over many years. And you've warned people about this, as it were, certificate of indebtedness that God has in heaven with their name on it. But they won't listen to you. They won't believe you. They say it's a load of nonsense. Then we must pray, mustn't we? We must pray urgently. Because whether people believe it or not is immaterial. Whether people like it or not is immaterial. It is the truth. And it may be an inconvenient truth, and it may be an unpleasant truth. But it is the truth. We can't make it go away by pretending it doesn't exist. So that's the first important thing then, isn't it? To know and to recognize. We must pray for this community and not give up praying. Jesus said men ought always to pray and not lose heart, because God's heart is to answer the prayers of his people. But perhaps you tonight need to hear. God has been very good to you. God has been very gracious by bringing this message to you. There are many in our world, and that's no credit to the church perhaps, but there are many in this world who are ignorant of the news God has caused to fall upon your ears and the news God has brought to your attention tonight. It may not be nice and pleasant to hear what's being said tonight, but oh, you need it. When you have a serious illness, it's not nice to hear it from the doctor, is it? And you wish for all the world that the doctor would say it was otherwise. But it's good to hear that that is there. If it is there, it's good to know it's there and to hear it's there. Because then you can see what might be done to deal with it. So hear tonight and believe, accept what God has to say. That's the first important thing. How do we deal with it then? When we know it's there, how do we deal with it? Well, I suppose the natural reaction of every human being is to think, what can I do about this? That's part of our sin, actually. The idea that we can sort all the problems in the world. And you see that in our society, don't you? I'm not saying we shouldn't have things like this, but groups get together, we're going to sort out the climate problem. We're going to sort out the cost of living crisis. We're going to sort this out, and we're going to sort that out, as if human beings by themselves have the power to make everything all right. And this idea that we are the answer to all the world's problems, and we can make it right, and we can make a difference. And we think of that in our own situation. Well, what can I do then? What can I do to deal with this certificate of indebtedness? What can I do to put things right with God? Well, the Bible is quite clear. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. We have nothing by ourselves to offer God that can make the slightest difference to our predicament. Because by nature, everything we do is tainted and spoiled with sin. And in an odd sense, in trying to sort our own debt out, all we do is add to the debt. Self-righteousness and human self-reliance. But what a predicament then. Here we are in debt to God. And that debt has major consequences that God is going to bring to bear if nothing is done about it. And we can't do anything about it. What hope is there then? Disaster, is it not? Well, no, this is where the good news comes in. Because the good news is that God himself declares that he has and will deal with your certificate of indebtedness. He has it in heaven. He's got it. He can bring it out, as it were, or if you want to change the metaphor, he can bring it up on his computer screen, if you're a bit more familiar with that. God can bring up the list. It's got your name, got your date of birth. God knows it all. Every failed opportunity, every time you haven't loved and cherished and honoured and obeyed God, he's got it all there. And Paul tells us wonderfully that God, this is the good news, this is what we declare tonight, this is what should set our hearts rejoicing, that God has for his people, and he will for you tonight if you seek it, he will, yes, use a computer analogy, delete your certificate of indebtedness. He will remove it from sight. Let's go back to the original day. They weren't using computers. I said it was written on papyrus, wasn't it? You'd have to write on your certificate of indebtedness your name and how much you were in debt, and the person would have it in their possession against you. Now, why is it significant that it was on papyrus? Well, ink in those days would not contain the acid that modern day ink does. And so the ink would not have soaked into the papyrus. It would have remained on the surface. And when a person had paid off the debt, when the debt had been cleared, what would the creditor do? He would take out the certificate of indebtedness that he had against you, and he would quite literally wipe it clean. He would wipe the ink off the papyrus, like erasing chalk from a blackboard. That takes us back to our school days, perhaps even for me, it was chalk on a blackboard. And by the time he'd finished, there was no trace of ink left on the papyrus at all. No debt, no obligations, no consequences, no penalty, because the whole matter had been dealt with. And Paul says, this is what God has done for his people, and what God will do for you tonight. He'll delete the record from the screen. Or he will take the ink and wipe it from the papyrus completely. Not even getting the old Tippex out. You know that messy stuff? Getting it out and across. And do you know what the trouble with Tippex is? Because if you really want to, you can get a ruler and do that kind of thing and get the Tippex off. And what you wanted to hide is written underneath. And there it is, still there. All you've done is cover it up. But it's still there, hasn't been dealt with really. Not like that with what God does. Gone. No trace. You can't get a ruler out, as it were, and bring it all back to sight with a little bit of hard work. How does God do that, though? On what grounds does God simply remove the debt? All that failure to give him what he deserves from us. How does God deal with that? Does he just decide to forget about it? Is his heart so big? Is he so kind and warm towards human beings that he can't bear the thought of them suffering the penalty of their indebtedness? So he simply says, look, I'll rip it up, or I'll delete it off the screen, or I'll wipe it out. Don't worry about it. It doesn't matter. Is that what he's done? I'm a follower of cricket, and a number of years ago, Glamorgan County Cricket Club were in debt to the tune of £16 million, which was a lot of money for them, because they don't bring in a lot, because they're not a great team, and they don't attract a lot of support and investment. But they borrowed money from the Welsh Government and from Cardiff Council to develop their cricket ground. And they were in debt to the tune of £16 million, and they declared, we simply cannot pay this back. And there's every chance that if it's required of us to pay the full amount, that we will go bust. And so they asked their creditors, look, rather than require the whole amount from us, and we can't pay it, and we go bust, and nobody gets anything, write off, please, 70% of our debt. Just write it off as if it was never there. And we'll pay back 30%. We can manage that. And that's what happened. And you can imagine the residents of Cardiff are not very pleased, particularly those who didn't like cricket, that their council tax and whatever had gone on a cricket ground. Is that what God has done? Just let people off their obligations. Don't worry about it. It doesn't matter. Just written the debt off without requiring anything for it. Well, no, he hasn't gone about it that way. He can't. Because his holiness demands that we give him our love and our service and our worship and our obedience. That has to happen. So God can't simply write it off. What has happened? Well, we're told here in this verse that Jesus Christ has done something about this debt. And he's done two things about it, actually. One is mentioned here, and I'm going to mention another one as well. The first one is this. And it's not mentioned here, but it is a clear biblical teaching that Jesus Christ has come into the world to do what we have failed to do. Do you remember what our obligation is? We're to love God with all our heart, soul, and strength, follow him, obey him, worship him, treasure him, cherish him. We're to do all that, and we haven't done it. That's the problem. And the wonderful thing is God sent his son into the world, a human being, you and me, to do for us what is required of us, but what we have failed to do. Jesus Christ stepped into our shoes and under our name lived a perfect life. Under your name, representing you, God's people, he lived the life that is required. He loved his Father with all his soul, heart, soul, mind, and strength. He worshipped the Father. He obeyed him perfectly. He said, I always do what pleases my Father. And Jesus Christ did that for his people. We talk about, we're going to show that now before we finish, about Jesus dying for his people. Friends, we forget that first, Jesus Christ lived for his people. He represented you, not simply at the cross, he represented you every day of his life up to the cross. Keeping the law, obeying the commandments, fulfilling the requirements. And when you put your faith in him, do you know what happens? All that law keeping and righteousness and obedience and worship and service that Jesus Christ rendered to the Father is given to you. It's put in your name. And God has in his book, in his record, no longer a certificate of indebtedness, but actually all that law keeping that Jesus Christ did for you. That's how he's dealt with your failure to do all that. He sent someone to do it instead of you, to represent you. But what about that failure? We know we've got something now in place of it, but what about the failure that is there? Well, we have it here in verse 14. God has taken it out of the way. How did he take it out of the way? He nailed it to the cross. That's interesting. He nailed it to the cross. That's significant. It speaks about the fact that God has placarded our certificate of indebtedness above the cross. You see, when the Romans crucified people, and they did plenty of that, didn't they? they would always nail above the head of the person who was being crucified a sign or a placard. And on that placard would be written the crimes for which they were being executed. They wanted people to know why this person was there, what had brought them to this place, why they were being crucified. And they wanted them to know that for an obvious reason, as a deterrent. They wanted people to read the placards about the sign of the person being crucified and to think, if I do that, I'll end up there. So I don't want to do that because I don't want to end up there. And so it was a deterrent. Look what happens if you do this. And so there would be a placard, a sign above the cross. And you know what Paul is saying here? Do you know what God did at Calvary? He put a placard above his son. And that placard was my certificate of indebtedness and your certificate of indebtedness if you put your faith in Christ tonight. Every one of his people's certificates of indebtedness were placarded above the cross. To say, this is what Jesus is here for. This is why he's on the cross. He is being punished for this. He is paying the price for this. And there was my failure to love and serve and honor and cherish and worship and obey God. And your failure to do that as well. And all God's people's failure to obey that was there on the cross. And God was saying, for that, I've put my son here. For that my son has come here gladly. And here is the price. My wrath. My judgment. My justice. Poured out upon this man. And so the penalty has been paid for your indebtedness. But you don't pay it. That's the good news. Jesus Christ paid it instead. He deals with your failure to do it. And he gives you what he did instead. There's a wonderful story in the Bible that illustrates this. I met a man this morning called Philemon. I've never met a man called Philemon in my life. It was a thrill. But there's a man called Philemon in the Bible. And he had stolen money, hadn't he? From Onesimus. And this man Philemon is on the run with the money he's stolen. And he meets... sorry, it's the wrong way around, isn't it? Yeah, I could see some of you looking a bit funny at me then. Philemon is the man who had the money stolen. Onesimus was on the run with money from Philemon. And Onesimus meets Paul. And perhaps through Paul's ministry, seems, Onesimus comes to faith. And he's concerned at what he's done. That he's stolen money from Philemon. And that he is in debt to him. And he can't pay it. The money's gone. He's spent it. What's going to happen now? Well, Paul writes a letter, doesn't he, to Philemon? We've got it in the New Testament. And he pleads with Philemon to forgive Onesimus for what he did in running off with his money. But interestingly, he doesn't say to Philemon, you've got to forget about the debt. He hopes he will, actually, in an act of Christian grace. But he says he don't have to. He says to him, if he has wronged you or owes anything, put that on my account. In other words, Paul says, if you want that money back, you're entitled to have it. If you want that money back, Onesimus can't pay it, but I'll pay it for him. And that's a wonderful picture of Jesus Christ on the cross, paying the debt for us. My sin, oh, the bliss of this glorious thought. My sin, not in part, but the whole. Is nailed to his cross. It's from this verse that hymn. Is nailed to his cross. And I bear it no more. Praise the Lord. Praise the Lord, O my soul. If you're a believer tonight, do not lose the joy of your salvation. Your certificate of indebtedness is no more. It's been wiped out at the cross through Jesus Christ paying it for you. And that certificate of indebtedness has been replaced with a record of righteousness. Jesus' righteousness credited to your account. Satan will come and he will try and tell you, well, we had it tonight, I didn't choose that hymn, but spot on, when Satan tempts me to despair, and tells me of the guilt within, what do? Try and make it better myself? No. Upward I look. Look away from yourself. Upward I look and see him there. Jesus, who made an end of all my sin. When Satan comes to you and seeks to discourage you, you tell him about a verse in the Bible that said, God has taken away, wiped out the handwriting of requirements, the certificate of indebtedness that was against you, that was contrary to you. It was nailed to the cross when Jesus Christ died. Believer, rejoice in your salvation. An unbeliever, that certificate of indebtedness is real. God's got it. But tonight, if you will come to him with your debt, doesn't he expect you to pay it? Come to him tonight and say, I can't pay this. This is hopeless. I can't get anywhere with this. My only hope is for you to be gracious to me. My only hope is for you to look on Jesus Christ and pardon me. And I pray, Father, remember. Remember what happened at the cross. Remember, Father, that my certificate of indebtedness, you nailed above Jesus on Calvary. And remember, Father, that he lived the life I didn't live, and I must have lived, and I didn't do it. Did it for me. Remember all that, and on the basis of Jesus alone, forgive me. And you will find the Father ready and willing to do just that. The hymn says, come then, repenting sinner, come. Approach with humble faith. Oh, what you will, the total sum is cancelled by his death. That's the good news. Good news for you. Good news for me. Good news for this village. And may God be pleased to bring a great deal of debt cancellation yet into this little corner of Pembrokeshire by his mercy.